We're going to analyze the S. You know, S, St. Thomas, S-T. But McLuhan's emphasizing the S, the rock labyrinth and the water labyrinth. Okay, so are you guys ready?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to read the paragraph before to lead up to where we stopped. So McLuhan says, it is the Thomistic view, Thomas Aquinas' view, that beauty relates to a cognitive rather than a volitional power. In other words, it's not involved with desire or agency or will. It's a perspective, an angle, or some kind of awareness, a cognitive power that led Joyce, the view that beauty relates to a cognitive rather than a volitional power, that led Joyce to prefer comedy to tragedy. The long passage from his notebooks given by Herbert Gorman, who did a book on Joyce in back then, and pages 96 and 97, what this passage will become a locus classicus, or classical, a major focus point. So here's what Joyce wrote. An improper art aims at exciting, in the way of comedy, the feeling of desire. But the feeling which is proper to comic art is the feeling of joy, not the feeling of desire. The feeling, and the feeling of joy is the feeling which the possession of some good excites in us. So that's the feeling that people get from private sessions with Ion. For desire urges us from rest that we may possess something, but joy holds us in rest as long as we possess something. So desire, you're in rest and you think you are missing something, so desire makes you try to possess something. But joy doesn't require, it is satisfied. What is that? Happy and ready for more? It's in rest because you have possessed something of significance, so we don't need any more, so to speak. But joy holds us in rest as long as we possess something. All art which excites in us the feeling of joy is so far comic. Is so far comic. And according as this feeling of joy is excited by whatever is substantial or accidental in human fortunes, the art is to be judged more or less excellent. From this it may be seen that tragedy is the imperfect manner and comedy the perfect manner in art. All art, again, is static for the feelings Now, this is before the electronic world gets moving in the global theater and mass Android meme fucking replay of synesthesia. There's a new kind of art definition required. This is the Gutenberg art, Gutenberg perspective, which includes preliterate art. All art, again, is static for the feelings of terror and pity on one hand and of joy on the other hand are feelings which arrest us. So these feelings of desire art and cognitive art, they're feelings that make you get stopped. So art coming out of that is static. It will be seen afterwards, Joyce says, how this rest is necessary for the apprehension of the beautiful. For beauty is a quality of something seen, but terror and pity and joy are states of mind. See, beauty has something to do with the seeing. So it's like the final real use of visual space. But terror and pity, which are common in tribal societies, and joy are states of mind. So that's the background we got to. So then he says, it is hard to know, now this is McLuhan saying, it is hard to know where to begin to discuss any phase of Joyce because he is so much of a piece. What's that mean? That he is so good at the details? Or every part is important? It is hard to know where to begin to discuss any phase of Joyce because he is so much of a piece. Anything of his includes all the... Now, he shows that by having HCE and ALP scattered all throughout the book and, you know, injected into words. So he's showing the beginning kernel is in all the rest of the book. Anything of his includes all the rest. So maybe so much of a piece means that. Thus, for example, his statement of the problem of genres seems simple and natural. So here are the three types of art. There are three conditions of art, the lyrical, the epical, and the dramatic. That art is lyrical, whereby the artist sets forth the image in immediate relation to himself. So lyrical art is more like subjective. That art is epical, whereby the artist sets forth the image in immediate relation, immediate relation to himself and to others. So he starts connecting to the outer world, the outer kingdom. You deal with social mortar. That's the epical art, or epic. Then the third one, that art is dramatic, whereby the artist sets forth the image in immediate relation to others. So the second one sets forth the image in immediate relation to himself and to others. Himself is included in the second art, epic. But the third art, there's no self. That art is dramatic, whereby the artist sets forth the image in immediate relation to just others. It just says relation to others. So the electric age is dramatic because there's no self that you can keep hold of, unless you understand the dynamics, and you're totally sucked into the hive mind, and you're very concerned about your relationships to others. Mm. All right? That's what they call peer group pressure for kids. So the first, subjectivity, the image in relation to oneself, that would be the beginning of discovering a private identity, which would come in with phonetic writing or early writing. So it's very subjective, and it's selfish, so to speak. Then you start noticing there's a world and a bunch of other writers and other things going on. So you say, well, what's my relationship to them? So that's then you write an epic about that. But dramatic art is finding its wake. You're always in the middle, always being dramatized. That's in relation to the image in relation to others. It's almost like not you. It's the image. So the lyric was his first novel, his poetry, Chamber Music. That was in like 1907, so he'd be like 25. So he published his poetry, and that would be a lyrical exhibit. And then he did a book on Dubliners, 15 stories, and that would be an epic. And then he did a play called The Exiles, and showing the interplay of two couples. So that's the first time he runs through lyrical, epic, and dramatic. Then he redoes it. Now the lyrical is redone, not as poetry, but as a portrait of the artist as a young man, a portrait of the lyricist or lyrical artist. So it's a detached view that Joyce is presenting as a laboratory specimen. So portrait of the artist as a young man is the lyrical. Then how do you redo Dubliners? You make this huge epic called Ulysses about Dubliners. And then you're now going to engage the present and your immediate relation to others, which is electrified. So the dramatic takes the play, Exiles, and redoes it as the multi-genre Finnegan's Wake. Hmm. Okay? So there's a nice package way of categorizing Joyce's work. So yeah. McLuhan, that's Gorman quoting Joyce's notebooks. That's what Joyce laid out for his own organization. And it's a statement on the problem of genres. And McLuhan says, the statement seems simple and natural. Then McLuhan says, but the complex generic idea operative here, and what I just read, is a shadow at once of the three operations of the intellect, stages of apprehension, and of the procession of persons in the Trinity, capital P, Father, Son, the Holy Ghost, I guess. So the three operations of the intellect were claritas, consonantia, and something else. Remember that? I think somebody here knew those three terms. Anybody know it?
No.
The three aspects of... it's claritas, consonantia, and I don't know if he gives the third term. They're the three aspects of beauty. I remember I did that. You look at the object, and look, it's a general thing, and then you see its particularness, and then you see it's even more quiddity, the quiddity of the object. Do you remember that part?
No.
Nobody.
The three qualities of beauty? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
That's what you discussed last week. Three qualities
yes.
of beauty.
Right. You remember that?
Oh.
Yes. I have it. It's from the. It's from Aquinas. Three qualities of beauty:
yeah,
integrity, distinction,
proportion,
ratio, and clarity. Integrity,
what's the first
proportion,
one?
And clarity.
Integrity, proportion, and clarity. What'd you say, Roxy?
Resonance.
Okay. So I'm going back to look at page one and two to see. Oh, yeah. So it's talking about the an epiphany. It is just in this epiphany that I find the third, the supreme quality of beauty. So the artist who could disentangle the subtle soul of the image from its mesh of defining circumstances, that's like figure ground. The soul is a figure to retrieve from the ground, defining circumstances. The one who can do it most exactly and re-embody it in artistic circumstances, chosen as the most exact for its new office, for the new positioning of the soul. The artist who could do that was the supreme artist.
May I say something?
Yeah.
These are also the three pillars in the Kabbalah, and also in these paths of ascension, they also have the three kings, the three pillars. And the Templars had even more pillars, all the pillars that you had to conquer to attain or to go into the path.
Right. Did you say tripular?
The three pillars.
Three pillars is what you think are the stages of beauty apprehension.
Yes, because one is the Doric, the Ionic, and the Corinthian.
Oh, yeah, right, right.
The Prudence, and I don't know what.
Oh, they had those terms on the pillars.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
In the Convent of Christ in Tomar, in Portugal, where the Templars had their independent state.
Yeah.
They have a lot of pillars. Not just three. They have the pillar of severity, the pillar of mercy, the pillar of, I don't know, many pillars.
Right. You know, that in Portugal was the people who sent the first explorers out before Christopher Columbus.
I think it has to do with the Templars that they were sending.
Yeah. And they operated from Portugal. They had their own state. Yeah. That's pretty good. Okay, so back to the essay. Ordinary experience
Magallanes.
Is a riot of... What?
Magallanes was the name of...
Of what? The name of what? Magus... The name of what? Oh.
We must have got disconnected.
Yeah, I'm disconnected.
Okay, so... see how quickly she gets back in, because I don't want her to miss this.
Well, I looked it up, Bob. She was talking about the classical orders, architectural order.
Okay.
The architectural orders that were represented by the pillars, the Doric, Ionic, and Corinthian.
Does it say beauty? Classical orders of beauty?
No, the building, this is architectural order, is akin to the mode or key of classical music and grammar or rhetoric of a written composition.
You get the three arts there. Okay, Roxy's back.
Okay. Just let me finish.
Okay, Roxy, Jean is saying that the three categories you used are the three orders of architecture.
Yes, the pillars. The pillars were used by the Templars, and then they were taken by the Masons. And there is also in the Mason system, they have pillars to mark their degrees. There is a pillar with a snake also.
Mm.
I think it's the 23 degree, the pillar with the snake.
Right, back then, to get a solid person...
This goes from these ideas of the things you needed to be wise or to ascend, or like Thomas Aquinas also, or Botticelli makes the three graces and all this.
Yeah, I'm thinking that this pillar comes in with the effect of writing, making solid individual, visually biased individuals, and they're represented by a stiff pillar. So the temple is an empty space that's a collective consciousness, and then you have these newly created individuals or ascended strong individuals. Each is a pillar.
They
use stone.
Yes.
What? Yeah, okay.
Like in the Cart of the Tower of the Charioteer, there are...
Yeah.
Four pillars behind him.
Mm.
Two are blue, two are red. And in the School of Athens, Plato is dressed as, with a red robe, mm-hmm. and Frank the First with a blue robe. So the pillars are
two pillars,
and
right.
the people who are sustaining the environment.
Yeah, the other famous people are in around them.
Yes, so the pillars are the ascended snakes.
Yeah, okay. So he says about the perfect art, supreme artist. Then McLuhan says, ordinary experience is a riot of imprecision, of impressions enmeshed in preconceptions, cliches, profanities, and imperceptions. So that's social mortar. But for the true artist, every experience is capable of an epiphany. So he's detached. He doesn't get involved in the experience. He looks at it as a symbol of something. And then McLuhan quotes Joyce from Stephen Hero, the first version of the Portrait Artist as a Young Man. I wanted to say that my cost for surfing, for the board and everything, is $20.83 every week. So that's 8 and 3 is 11, times 2 is 22. Okay, just a note there. There's the symmetry. The archetype comes back. I have to pay the public tax of 22-ness. By an epiphany, the artist meant a sudden spiritual manifestation, whether in the vulgarity of speech or gesture, so some social mortar, or in a memorable phase of the mind itself. A nice, well-said thing. Both are products of speech. They're going to be the raw material for epiphany. Imagine my glimpses of that clock as the gropings of a spiritual eye which seeks to adjust its vision to an exact focus. The moment the focus is reached, the object is epiphanized. Now, back then in the flux of pre-literate tactile society, they didn't have objects. It was all flux. So this whole phenomenon of making an object out of a visually biased or visually created object out of the flux is the beginning of writing. And when you get to the phonetic alphabet, it turns writing into an art form, and they make ideology out of this process of perception of creating objects. Now, in the Greek period, it is this whole doctrine of beauty and becomes a spiritual epiphany. So that's an interesting point. McLuhan says that Plato's writings turned Socrates, an oral form, into a visual art form, put inside the new visual probe of a book. But it's the content, the oral dialogue, that is the old environment. So the moment the focus...
You also talk, about how the banking is also a product of this and...
Yeah.
Yes.
And
ownership.
The Templars that are into the pillars that you are just explaining as a effect of
product
the visual,
of writing.
And they got into the banking.
Yes. You know, they had the individuality and then the means to do it, and they had the purpose. They were traveling to the promised land. They had a goal over the horizon. The local people had no goals. They just wallowed around in their sensory confusion of their little villages and stuff. These guys were on a horse. That's a visual, early visual space mechanism to look towards the horizon. They had a goal. So that goal-oriented led to property and wealth, and then they organized the other travelers. Okay, so...
Yes, and their symbol is the Red Cross. That is the...
Yeah, that's
the
blood.
Pillar, the cross. The blood is the pillar, the ladder.
Which is the chromosome, becomes the chromosome 14. Boy, they really were fucking advertising when they show the chromosome 14 and then the blood in red.
Yes.
It's like blatant, but the odd out visual, the odd out tactile peasants, they couldn't see. They didn't think in those kind of visual categories. They're really good at listening and intuiting with the other senses.
Yeah.
But they never noticed the hiding in plain sight.
Yeah.
They put on a flag. Okay. The moment the focus is reached, the object is epiphanized. It is just in this epiphany that I find the third, the supreme quality of beauty, says Stephen Hero. Then McLuhan says, Joyce identified the three notes of beauty of St. Thomas with the three operations of the intellect, the process of forming visual space, in a way. Now for the third quality. For a long time, I couldn't make out what Aquinas meant. He uses a figurative word, but I have solved it. Claritas is quiditas. So clairitis is the third phase. After the analysis, which discovers the second quality, the mind makes the only logical possible synthesis and discovers the third quality. This is the moment which I call epiphany. First, we recognize that the object is one integral thing. That's a big deal to notice the fucking objectifying phenomena. Then we recognize it is, oh, it's organized. It's a repeatable thing. Composite structure. And it's a thing, in fact. Then finally, when the relation of the parts is exquisite, when the parts are adjusted to the special point, we recognize it is that thing which it is. Now, there's the stages of fucking visual space, just realizing that for the first time. He's laying out how visual space got made in the West, how things became objects. And
yes,
then
and how the Templars start this banking system and expanding, and they link it to the visual space, to going into this pilgrimage to conquer the pillars. One was the Santiago de Compostela, other was going to Jerusalem, and the other was the Vatican.
So you have these three pillars
with many stages to conquer all these things you needed to ascend.
Now, the echo of that process, it creates the soul at the beginning of a special individuation, which, you know, before that, people weren't souls. They could go to parallel worlds, but they weren't discrete objects. So out of this, this three-part process of making an object, it then says its soul, the object's soul, its whatness leaps to us from the vestment of the clothing of its appearance. The soul of the commonest object, the structure of which is so adjusted, seems to us radiant. The object achieves its epiphany. That's actually explaining how the whole Augustinian concept of the soul happens, of the individual that's subject to sin and has to be saved. That's what Christianity brought in, but it took hundreds of years to make an effect, to be part of the mortar. So the three parts of the soul thing are, what's the first one, and then consonantia, and then claritas?
Integrity.
Yeah, those are the English words. What's the three Italian or Latin words? Consonantia, did we say that? Claritas, consonantia, and something else. Maybe integritas. I remember seeing that word, integritas. Is that in another part of this essay?
Mm.
Well, he calls it...
integritas.
Okay, I'm... What?
I don't know. I'm trying to be awake now.
Okay, so we're moving forward. That was a review of that. So we got the parts of beauty, which become the three operations of the intellect, which I guess we just did. That's the three aspects of beauty. And it relates to the three parts of the persons in the Trinity. It's a theological process. That's the creation of the soul and its parts. Well, that's pretty neat. But the complex generic idea operative here, even though it was a simple statement of the three types of literature, the generic operative idea is a shadow at once of the three operations of the intellect and of the procession of persons in the Trinity. There is also a note of Joyce's dated at Paris, March 27, 1903. That's when he took off as a, I think he was just out of school, and he was wondering whether to take medicine in Paris or Britain or something. So he visits Paris for a few months and then goes back. Then he meets Nora, and then they leave in October 2, 1904, leave Dublin again, together, and then he stays. But he does go over a year before. So he's a note he makes at Paris, which concerns Aristotle and imitation. The phrase is, he techne mimetatea tan physin. This phrase is falsely rendered. Forget it. Okay, it's not perfect. This phrase is falsely rendered as, Joyce, is his notes say, what I just mumbled, people think it means art is an imitation of nature. No. Joyce says, Aristotle does not here define art. He says only, quote, art imitates nature, and means that the artistic process is like the natural process of perception. Art imitates. So we're leading up to the statement, McLuhan's point, that art mimes the stages of apprehension. The stages of apprehension are natural. So it's not a definition of art. Art is an imitation of nature. No, art imitates nature. So two different processes, technology and what I used to call first nature. Okay, so that's that. And then you go to, McLuhan says, it is in Stephen Hero that there are the texts which explain what Joyce understood by natural process. That's in quotes. For Stephen, art was neither a copy nor an imitation of nature. The artistic process was a natural process. So that implies it's a new adding to nature, not an imitation of it. It's a veritably sublime process of one's own nature, which had a right to examination and open discussion. In other words, had a right to engage in mortar and into thought and little man speculation. Okay? I don't know. I don't think I'm putting the Ionic put down of that. Joyce thinks it's cool that we have the right to examination and open discussion. Or not. That this process is that of ordinary apprehension is made plain on page 212, I guess, of Stephen Hero. Now, this is here it is. Joyce writes, maybe the character is thinking this. Stephen Hero's thinking this. What we symbolize in black, the Chinaman may symbolize in yellow. Each has his own tradition. Greek beauty laughs at Coptic beauty. That would be Egyptian beauty, I think. And the American Indian derides them both. It is almost impossible to reconcile all tradition, whereas it is by no means impossible to find the justification of every form of beauty that has ever been adored on earth by an examination. Okay, so it's almost impossible to reconcile all traditions, all these different claims by different cultures. Where it is by no means impossible, that means it is possible to find the justification of every form of beauty that has ever been adored on earth, you know, by different cultures, by an examination of the mechanism of aesthetic apprehension, whether it be dressed in red, white, yellow, or black. There's the alchemical colors. So the mechanism is a red person, a white person, a yellow person, or a black person. We have no reason for thinking that the Chinaman has a different system of digestion from that which we have through our diets. We have no reason for thinking that the Chinaman has a different system of digestion from that which we have, though our diets are quite dissimilar. The apprehensive faculty must be scrutinized in action. So just like we digest food, we digest through our senses the apprehension of being. And that is common to all humans, not the superficial content of their process, what they prefer.
Like eat that question.
Yes, Zappa, Zappa's documentary, Eat That Question, which was originally Eat That Christian, Frank told us.
Really?
In our private interview that we did, he told us that originally it was called Eat That Christian. And, of course, it comes from this scenario from the Grand Wazoo album, where this Roman kind of emperor is, you know, sacrificing musicians to the commercial process. It's a great parody of the music industry that Zappa's making, of the emperor eating the eat that question, which is like eat that information, eat that new fucking new day of electronic process drool that is leaked on everybody or vomited on everybody every day in the media.
Yes, and before the drugs, we started with asking Ion, so
yeah, that was the first phase. That's right. Phase one. Our trinity is ask Ion questions.
The answers. The
what?
Question. It's a way of eating.
Yeah, good point. But remember, the three-part process was Ion laid this out after 2 years of it at the end of 2011. And there he said the first phase is to engage new information, new ideas that I am going to present to you that you've never heard before. The second phase is just to eat the drops. And the third phase is to decide, what do you make of all this? And what are you going to leave or stay or die or ascend? That's we actually got three. See, I find this article we come for. It's always part of the work. We now have three phases of Iondom that matches the three phases of fucking beauty and the three phases of the persons of the Trinity. And it's all a digestive process, the stages of apprehension.
Yeah, woo. Stuff works right.
Which brings it back to the first time of the new coach house, because you discussed the stages of apprehension at the first show.
Yeah, in the first time, the first day. And did you just say stop and scry, Roxy?
No, I cry.
Oh, stop and cry. Because scrying is a form of analysis, I think. Scrying. Okay,
no,
so.
I just had it. Okay,
so we're going to move in.
Hold on.
What?
Did you say art mimes the stages of apprehension? The stages of apprehension are natural?
Yes, and art is natural. It's an addition to, it's a new environment. Now, McLuhan's not going to say that, but we can project ahead what he means. He's talking about simple terms.
Art is the way we respond.
Art is made, human-made technologies, including speech and gesture.
Yeah, and you made that distinction where we're always responding in some way to our environment, and that's what creativity is the act of
right, to the contrast. So art is a medium, and it's in between the natural process and the agent of intellect, maybe. It's in between. It's the output. It's the product of the human cognition interacting with the collective cognition of social mortar, and you make a media out of it. And that can be the momentary deities of spoken words or significant gestures.
Was that with spoken word, or did the caveman experience the stages of apprehension?
Yeah, they did by their grunting. They did verbum, V-E-R-B-U-M.
Sure.
McLuhan did a tetrad on verbum. That's like non-semantic grunting.
Uh-huh.
And that's Zappa's first movie, one of his first. Captain Beefheart meets the grunt people. So Zappa, whether they knew or not, was describing the suburban caveman that he and Captain Beefheart were surrounded by.
The way the non-physical come in.
Non-physical is the ground of the need for communication in art and media. People are trying to connect, but they're already connected on the deep level through non-physical, and that is an artificial situation because you shouldn't need to require to be connected to anybody. But you are connected through non-physical that you die into when you're sick of the contrast and you bathe in the warmth of the collective ESP of the non-physical guff.
Wow.
Wow. Carolyn got an insight.
Wow, is right.
Whoa.
So, all right.
There's
hold
a wow.
Now.
Hold on.
So the stages of apprehension are a natural response to our environment as little man.
The stages of apprehension happen in our bodies. Art and thinking and making is a miming of the stages of apprehension. It imitates the stages of apprehension.
Ooh. Okay.
Yeah, and that's what he's going to explain. He's done the three parts of beauty, or the three operations of the intellect in relation to beauty and the epiphany, and they relate to the three persons in the Trinity. So he's really making the God process anthropomorphic and physical.
Yes, yeah.
You know, three persons of Trinity, and he's going to say these are the stages of apprehension, which is what we began with in the first coach house. Now we're filling in some details that lead to media study, which is miming the stage of apprehension. So we're coming back to what McLuhan is on about. He's the one who's making a big deal out of the stages of apprehension. All right? Mm-hmm. So he's going to relate it to it. So he has to say, what are these stages? What is apprehension? It's a digestive process that people have in their senses and in their stomach. Everybody has it, despite surface cultural differences, which causes contrast, which creates creativity. So Joyce said, now this is getting this from Joyce, the apprehensive faculty must be scrutinized in action. That's what McLuhan defines Christianity as, studying the process of awareness, or awareness and process. So that's a phrase that covers a lot of now collective media study, but it goes back to the simple process of studying the operation of your senses, right? We have no reason for thinking that the Chinaman has a different system of digestion from that which we have, though our diets are quite dissimilar. The apprehensive faculty must be scrutinized in action. So that's what Joyce wrote through the character Stephen Hero. Then McLuhan says, it is impossible to exaggerate. You cannot exaggerate the importance of this last phase. you can make a fucking 500-hour movie to illustrate this phase. And you can say, I'm not exaggerating. I was told to do this. This is so important that we are going to spend the next 300 years building a pyramid to show that art imitates nature. And it began with eating. Remember, food is one of the first man-made objects. So you imbibe the new environment, food that you've made, and it alters your system.
Mm.
So eating is the first process of being fallen man. We add the fallen man.
And that's always a response to technology, right? To the new
technology.
Well,
food is the first technology. One of the first, because
humans
make
something. When they cooked it, that was under.
Yeah, when they altered what was given to them. And there's a question. Don't bother altering, says the Old Testament. Stick with the Garden of Eden. Just eat what's there. You don't have to do anything. Just be like Bob. Be fucking lazy and have Eve serve you up the meal, which is right there on the tree. And spend your time naming things like Adam did. That's why I just name things. Sort of. I've been accused of it. But that's just me trying to get along with the little people. You got to look useful. As I said to Jeffrey yesterday, I'm just spreading the wisdom, Jeffrey. I'm just spreading the surfing wisdom. Your eyes are not what they seem. Okay, so, they should have a documentary of me walking around, mingling with the little people, how humble I act, how private, quiet, just a nerd. You know?
We heard the guffaw. We heard the guffaw, Carolyn.
Yeah, Carolyn. Well, she... Yes, yes, that's right. She sees a different situation. She's seen a lot of many hours of the documentary. Usually, it's me letting Carolyn speak. That's how I get away with a lot of get ignored. Let Carolyn get the attention. Okay, so we did that. So then, and McLuhan says, it is impossible to exaggerate the importance of this last phase for an understanding of Joyce's art. Because Joyce never ceased to evolve technique for scrutinizing sensations and impressions, quote, at the very instant of their apparition. So he wasn't letting existence happen to him. As soon as reality started to be, he questioned it, scrutinized it. He was a central scrutinizer, to quote Zappa. He never ceased to evolve technique, you know, update his what he had, what was coming in his media diet. Because there's new media happening in his world. Because he never ceased to evolve technique for scrutinizing sensations and impressions at the very instant of their apparition. I mean, he's the first to describe television in... what's his name? Aldous Huxley names television, I think, in Brave New World, which is 1932. But he doesn't get into analyzing the implications of the apparatus as an extension of art, an extension of your digestive system. So then McLuhan says, and this whole thing, this meant for Joyce neither impressionism, so he wasn't following that art doctrine, nor expressionism, which is what Sheila Watson's PhD is about Lewis in relation to expressionism in the teens and 20s and how he wasn't an expressionist. So neither Joyce or Lewis are involved in the cults of art of the day. And this meant for Joyce neither impressionism nor expressionism, but the revelation of the profoundly analogical drama of existence as it is mirrored in the cognitive powers in act or in action. In other words, since any experience you have in your senses is not to be involved in, and you make it a metaphor, an analog of something, what McLuhan calls the analog mirrors. So immediately, a being is an existence. And I know I had that sensibility. I started giggling, my first winking, giggling, as soon as I interacted with a human being. I said, hey, buddy, we're pretending we're fucking human here, right? There's nothing here. I'm not even here. You're not here. Note that. I couldn't say it to him, but I was ready to laugh at what we were doing as soon as the opportunity arose. Ready to mock. The birth portrait of a Manipian as a young kid. That's Bob's story. You like that? Everybody here?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so... And this meant for Joyce neither impressionism nor expressionism, but the revelation of the profoundly analogical, metaphorical drama of existence, as it is mirrored in the cognitive powers in act. In other words, the very process of perceiving existence is the thing to be studied. That's your senses create, absorb existence. You're studying that before that happens.
What really hit me this summer, Bob, was the discussion during Coach House, and I said to you – how did I say that? I want to say assume. You work under the assumption that you've already responded.
Oh, yeah, that invisible thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sentence on page 32 or so of Interior Landscape where Aquinas said, the senses are already engaged in the next thing that you don't know, and you're living the previous sensory perception.
Yeah, and what I got there, what I've held on to there is we can only analyze our past, but if in some way, if you are aware that that's the only thing we can do is analyze our past, you can get closer to.
Well, you get good at analyzing your past. You get bored of it. It doesn't dominate your mind, and you let the mind do what it's supposed to do, which is on the autonomic system of monitoring the flow of blood. That's what your mind's supposed to be doing. It's involved in an activity you don't have to be aware of. And this is the beginning of writing and speaking. That's the beginning of the mind having something to be distracted by. So the yogi, if I understand, you go and do yoga and you study your body processes, and then you get into very, you know, minute awareness of things,
yes,
time and space in your body. That's another way of analyzing your stage of apprehension, the yoga process. But again, that's all gobbled up into doctrine, religious doctrine. Joyce is getting us back to the basics, and which frees you up not to have the cultural dogma about studying your senses. So then, so the mirroring of existence in the cognitive powers in act, the cognitive powers in action, in act. So the quote is, Stephen Hare and his friend Cranley, who is a very important friend of his who goes on to write books on cipher codes that are sold to the Pentagon or the military in the 30s. So Cranley is the guy who stays home. It's his actual address, 7 Eccles Street, that Leopold Bloom lives at. So here's his main buddy when they're like adolescents or 20-year-olds or something in college. They sat sometimes in the pit of a music hall, and one unfolded to the other, spoke to the other, the tapestry of his poetical aims, while the band bawled to the comedian, laughed to the comedian, and the comedian bawled to the band. Cranley, that's his friend, grew used to having sensations and impressions recorded and analyzed before him at the very instant of their apparition. So he learned this from Stephen, I guess. Or they both did it for some reason. They analyzed the effects of the music hall. That's what Roxy started doing when she was 9 years old. She fucking ran into these Gurdjieffian musicians who analyzed the fuck out of everything and even thought electronic data was fucking pleasurable.
Wow. Yeah.
Then they went and entertained their parents, bored the shit out of their parents with their beautiful electronic noise making, which they thought was cool because they were Gurdjieffians analyzing the sensory apparition of sound.
Sensory and analogical drama. Analogical, my first impression of that word was analogical versus digital. Are we in a digital drama?
Yes. Well, no. The digital drama excludes us. We're watching the digital have its miming of everything we did during the analogical phase of human evolution, of
and
technology.
The digital is like analogical.
To us. It's pretending
tripled.
To be human.
It's, like
it's a metaphor of the human
quadruple.
Process.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's like
squared. Okay, so moving along here. So they sat. I'll read it again. They sat sometimes in the pit of a music hall, and one unfolded to the other the tapestry of his poetical aims, while how they were going to be an artist, while the band bawled to the comedian and the comedian bawled to the band. Cranley grew used to having sensations and impressions recorded and analyzed before him, right before him, at the very instant of their apparition. So then McLuhan says, Dubliners, now we go to the collective book, the epic book, leaving the private lyrical book about the artist. Now we get into sociology, so to speak. Dubliners, for example, is a tapestry of such arrested apparitions variously woven into the natural process of childhood, youth, maturity, and age. So it's almost like it's still mortar, and the portrait of the artist is involved with mortar, but there's something a little bit different. It's going through, it's not the artist as a youth. It's the whole phases of the human being, childhood, youth, maturity, and age. And McLuhan later relates these four phases to the four Viconian cycles, gods, hero, public men, and chaos. So you're beginning to analyze collective media when you get into the Dubliners. Dubliners, for example, is a tapestry of such arrested apparitions, stopping the sensation of looking at it, variously woven into the natural process of childhood, youth, maturity, and age. The portrait is likewise static, as the title insists, an inclusive moment, so it's stopped. All art at that point is stopping the stage of apprehension, an inclusive moment focusing the stage of artistic apprehension in a vivisection of the young artist. So the Dubliners is the whole history of life, of the four cycles, four stages, but the portrait makes a portrait, a static statement on the young artist. It's a vivisection of the young artist. So then it is noteworthy that Joyce excludes from the aesthetic discussion in the portrait just those features of the Thomistic analysis of cognition which were most important to Joyce as a mature artist. So the more mature analysis of collective apparitions and apprehensions and media is not included in the portrait. It's a portrait of an immature early phase of studying the stages of apprehension. Now, whenever I read this, I hear McLuhan say it because he reads this on the radio on CBC back in the 40s and 50s, and it has a nice ring to it the way he reads it, and that's in one of my McLuhan archives. It's in Furry Lynn. Who's forgotten Furry Lynn? McLuhan's reading this. He said he's sort of like half singing it. He says, let's see. You can hear McLuhan going, it is noteworthy that Joyce excludes from the aesthetic discussion in the portrait just those features of the Thomistic analysis of cognition which were most important to him as a mature artist, namely the fact that the creative process is the natural process of apprehension arrested and retraced, as your metanoia. Namely the fact that, so the artist, as a young man, is trying to be creative. The old man understands the whole creative process. Namely, and this is excluded from the portrait, namely the fact of the creative process is the natural process of apprehension arrested and retraced. The Stephen of the portrait, probably named after the Dedalian Stefan Mallarmé, Stephen Mallarmé, who's like Daedalus, he flew too close to the sun, the Stephen of the portrait understands Aquinas via Mallarmé. Whereas Joyce, the mature artist, he just says Joyce the artist, but he means the mature guy, which led to Aquinas by Mallarmé and the Symbolists. So he studied the arts, he studied Mallarmé and the Symbolists, and that unpredictably led to Aquinas and made his mature.
Finish that, because it's while led to Aquinas by Mallarmé and the Symbolists. Finally,
yeah, he
was able.
Yeah, the portrait understands Aquinas. The Stephen of the portrait understands Aquinas via Mallarmé. He's studying art. He's a young art student, and he's studying the poets. And he realizes something about the stages of apprehension, or he realizes some prefiguring of that. And later, when he's a more mature person, he gets that's what Aquinas is talking about, what Mallarmé and them were trying to explain, already been done by Aquinas. So Stephen understands Aquinas via Mallarmé. See, it's more Mallarmé, whereas Joyce the artist, while led to Aquinas by Mallarmé and the Symbolists, finally was able to complete the work of the Symbolists because he discovered how to perfect their insights by means of Aquinas.
Mm.
So there's Joyce the Catholic. He doesn't respect the church, supposedly, but he has to deal, he's finding their choice of philosopher is pretty important, the Catholic Church choice of Aquinas. And McLuhan later writes about the most profound metaphysical doctrine is the doctrine of analogical proportions, something like that, which is the term for what Aquinas developed.
And Aquinas has the stages or the three parts of beauty or the three aspects of beauty.
Yeah, that's right. He understands the stage of apprehension, so he knows about the formation of the intellect around beauty or epiphanies. Oh. So this is where McLuhan starts saying to Tom Wolfe, when Wolfe wrote the article on him, what if he's right? He writes a letter. It's in the letters. He says, you know, all this stuff about the art world, it all was done by the church fathers back in the Dark Ages. So he's saying our Catholic guys got ahead of you non-Catholic pagan occultists. That's pretty outrageous to claim that the Catholic Church, which the young artist is always rebelling against, because the church fails to satisfy their aesthetic needs, so they go into art. This is what happened
so
to Roxy.
They were literally relating apprehension, the stages of apprehension, to the qualities of integrity, proportion, and clarity.
As artists, they were trying to paint or make musical beauty. So they had to read and get speculate and have discussion over beauty, and they didn't know that this had been worked out by Aquinas. So Roxy goes to the nunnery, the convent, when she's 14, 15, and gets shocked at the discussing lifestyle of the nuns, so she retreats to art. Right, Roxy?
Right.
Yes.
Yes.
But this guy's even saying that...
This guy, yeah.
Even
this guy?
I get whoever wrote the article.
But McLuhan wrote the article.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah, whoever
anyway.
This guy is.
That it's even the analysis. That it's even the analysis of the beauty. Of.
Yeah, you're not getting hypnotized by the beauty. That's
even
desire.
That there's joy and beauty in the analysis of it.
Yes, yes. That's making art, which is at a state of rest, static
right.
rest, before the chaos of the TV global theater. That's where – I have a quote McLuhan says in one of the articles. He says in the early 70s, I'm at the most uncertain I've ever been in my life. What is he uncertain about? Nobody's ever heard him say that. He's always
yeah.
– you know, publicly stating he knows, but the journalist is making it up or he said it.
And this
so that's, and that's when he started doing yoga. That's, I mean, he recognized, holy shit, this is the devil. The electronic prince of the air is wiping out the church. This is the Antichrist. This is, well, what do I do about this, you know?
Yeah. It's amazing how his insights, Bob, that you've been noting, and I read in the first two paragraphs of Quentin McLuhan's site, is that the trivium really opened his mind up. I mean,
yeah.
There's a lot. I hear this reference, which you just said about the art came from the church fathers and the whole church, the patriot, what is it, patristic, or his reference
patristic
of the church
fathers. Yeah, the patriarch.
Patristic fathers,
two,
how it all
yeah.
dates back from his research in that, and that's what really opened him up. But then that's how he saw the danger, or what he perceived as electric environment was a threat to all of this.
Well, it had services and disservices, and depending on how his life was going, he'd get apocalyptic
yeah.
or not. You know,
yeah.
he oscillated, quadriphenic. Now, here's the thing. This agrees with Ion. The printing press fucked everybody up. And remember, people were relatively enlightened in the medieval period, he says, in what we call mm-hmm. the Dark Ages. And that's what the Pre-Raphaelites and different art movements said. We got to get back to pre-printing press times, to the sensibility of the medieval ages. Well, the main guys, at least who wrote stuff, were the fathers. So they had medieval balanced sensory life. So they knew a little bit more than the fucked up print POBs, print-oriented bastards. Right? So it's, again, fitting into Ion's point of McLuhan's explaining the fall of man in the media terms by the printing press. And he says that. So everybody thinks he's against books. They exaggerate that point. But he said, no, I'm a teacher of books. But he knew every medium had a service and disservice. So if you're inclined to figure out which side McLuhan was on, you'd say he hated books, you know, if you wanted to put him on one side. But he's oscillating between both services and disservices. So this really... I mean, we're reading something he wrote in 1950, which explains why he wrote to Tom Wolfe in 1965, what the fathers taught, that the modern artists were retrieving balanced medieval sensibility, which had visual space through writing
again,
and manuscripts.
That's again the Templar, the meaning
yes.
of Templar, not so hot, not so cool, the temperance.
That's medieval balance.
Yeah, to find the balance also in media, that
yes.
not to be so numb by any media we engage. So, if not,
well, you know, another level of real balance is they could engage in non-physical parallel worlding, or maybe that's part of physical, but they could do that, which was beyond the battles of sensory life in this one world. So they were balancing whole different, that's the ascended person. Got a balanced relationship to the world of human sensory life, and it is in the non-sensory world of whatever non-physical abilities are.
Well, and
so that goes beyond
that,
McLuhan.
Would you say that McLuhan wanted, was in the act of kind of preserving or extending the analysis of the soul through the Catholic rituals and, you know, keeping that ritual?
He always was doing that. And remember, it's a four-part thing he's doing. He's extending, obsolescing, retrieving, and flipping into something new, like he flipped into a state of uncertainty.
Even in the ritual, to keep the ritual going. Wow.
Well, sometimes if he wanted to hoik up the valley of the ritual, he'd find it in the ritual. Other times he'd say, you can't have Christianity under electric conditions. So the Mass was useless. So he wanted to translate the Mass into a media ritual, a balanced using of the different environments in the public city.
Well, I'm thinking right now of just that he practiced it religiously, you know, the ritual himself.
Because he interpreted the Mass as studying the stages of apprehension.
The analysis. Says,
yeah. Yeah. He says at the very beginning, remember I said the word incarnation?
Yeah.
One of the first paragraphs? Capital I, incarnation. He says that somewhere here. He talks about this whole process is the... Yeah, here it is. On page 4, which is the second page, it starts on page 3. For Joyce and Eliot, all art is a shadow of the incarnation, capital I. So all that Jesus did, which was to provide a lesson, the public Jesus, that's what all art should be. It's a shadow of the incarnation, which then becomes a shadow of Iondom, which makes Carolyn giggle over there, the evil Carolyn who's worked for thousands of years to dominate the fucking situation and become the great physician. ISIS, bringing back ISIS after a thousand years of Rai tyranny. So watch
Dr.
that lady.
Dr. Dean Syndrome.
Keep your eye on her. What?
Dr. Dean Syndrome.
Yes. Syndrome. I notice it in the Ionettes all the time. All Ionettes are shadows of Connie. It says here, for Joyce and Eliot, all art is a shadow of the incarnation, and every artist is dedicated to revealing or epiphanizing the signatures of things, not to make new things, but to show the signature, so that what the newest poeticus, that's the age and intellect, is to perception and abstraction, the artist is to existence at large. So the artist creates collective objects of abstraction, which is the same process the age and intellect gets involved in.
Wow.
Anyway, that's a pretty profound statement there. So back to where we're at, where Stephen understood the immature Stephen only is into the poets. Portrait of the artist as a young man. But when you get to be a mature human being, more than an artist, but including that, you understand why you can dig Aquinas. So, after he says the mature artist finally was able to complete the work of the symbolist, he completed, went further than the Mallarmé and the symbolist, because he discovered how to perfect their insights by means of Aquinas. Now, we bring in with Ion, what Roxy's tracking is the cult awareness of the value of the chromosome 14 in the blood and the coming eye cell. That is a hidden part of the artist that no art critic knows about. You could say the non-physical part of art. Okay, so which is another part of the reincarnation, miming the incarnation of Ion. So
the
then McLuhan says, yet, what?
It's incarnation of the new art. It's a whole new
right. Art. Now, can you imagine Andrew Crystal and the regular McLuhanites who say, don't bring up Ion? Here we are analyzing McLuhan and heresy of heresies relating it to Ion. They turned off hours ago. They can't take it. And Ion said, poor Mr. Crystal, he missed his access to the most beautiful thing that's ever going to happen in his life. That's when he would hang up every time Ion would come on. He'd leave.
They haven't experienced the literalness of Ion.
No. And it takes hours. They're just not lucky enough to realize, I don't like this fucking voice, but I'm going to stay around and listen to 1,000 hours of
years.
It. Who's going to do that? Nobody.
Years. Yeah.
So then he has a yet, after all that, yet, says McLuhan, it needs also to be said that the feebleness of grasp among Joyce critics is not so much their ignorance of St. Thomas as their half-awareness of what Joyce found in Flaubert, Rimbaud, and Mallarmé. I take from that you get lost in Catholic doctrine if you go to St. Thomas Aquinas. You've got to go through the anti-Catholic pagan guys who really analyze the stages of apprehension on a pure level without any Catholic dogma. You got to realize Flaubert, Rimbaud, and Mallarmé before you can understand what St. Thomas is. And most of the St. Thomas priests wouldn't agree with McLuhan about this leap of connection. So he says the problem with is not their ignorance of St. Thomas Aquinas. They just don't know the history of what Joyce learned from the symbolists. And then he says, because Joyce and Eliot have surpassed these writers, the symbolists, only, however, with their assistance. They couldn't, until they had to master these guys, understood what their point was, just like you got to understand McLuhan and the Holy Offices to get what Ion's doing, even though it has no connection to them, ultimately. But that's a later insight. So because Joyce and Eliot have surpassed these writers only, however, with their assistance, it is enforced on the English critic to perfect their knowledge of Flaubert, Rimbaud, and Mallarmé, if only that the French in turn may come to enjoy the achievement of Joyce and Eliot. So the English critic is going to help the French understand what their heroes, Flaubert, Rimbaud, and Mallarmé, created. And they don't know unless they understand Joyce and Eliot. And they have to understand what Joyce and Eliot got from Edgar Allan Poe and the French, so that the French can really get what the English, and then the English becomes what McLuhan called the control tower of human communication. In 1974, the English win. The English beat the fucking French. the battle in Canada, Quebec
Canadian
versus Toronto.
The Canadian beat them all.
Uh-oh, here comes the Spanish boys. The Spanish ain't going to have that. Yeah, Roxy, what?
Because they think they won, but look, where is the...
Yeah. Yeah, you lay low. You don't tell them you won, Roxy.
Particle accelerator in the loop.
Oh, yeah, so. that's getting really fucked up, man. All we needed was ion. A few years of evergreens, a little cosmic awareness prepared, Bob, for ion. That was the hidden museum technology, not the goddamn particle accelerator. Okay, very good, Roxy. We get your point there. Because Joyce and Eliot have surpassed these writers, only, however, with their assistance, the assistance of the French, because of that, it is enforced on the English critic, that's McLuhan, to perfect their knowledge of those French guys, if only that the French in turn may come to enjoy the achievement of Joyce and Eliot. So the French get bogged down in liking Flaubert, Rimbaud, Mallarmé, Antonin Artaud, all those guys that Baudrillard and them worshipped as the postmodernists worshipped as young guys. They don't even know really about Joyce until it's translated in the late 60s. I think Ulysses got translated in the late 60s for the French. So they start reading McLuhan because he was talking about Joyce. So that's how they discovered that. So their confusion, their Johnny-come-lately of Derrida and Baudrillard is very interesting when you really deeply understand McLuhan. You see they're trying to get McLuhan, but they can't be English, so they got to make a French bullshit, you know, anti-environment to the English, which then the Bolsheviks take over, the Rockefellers take over the Pentagon, and all the 80s, our universities are flooded with French Bolshevik literature from Silvère Lestrange and the CIMU textbooks. Only Bob knows this. I'm the only guy who tells Silvère, oh, fuck himself.
That's
even
where
though
Bob goes beyond McLuhan. That point,
yes.
Those last 2 points, where yes. Bob goes beyond McLuhan. The title.
I go beyond all of them. I didn't even know I was going beyond. I was just surfing, and my boat went the longest, or my wind jammer. I was surfing the kite. I was flying over them. We're making Connie laugh a lot today.